Thank you, Ron, and good morning.
Does everybody get notes?
Yeah. Anybody need notes? I hired a guy to help pass them out. If it's a husband and wife, I would like both of you to have one. Aha! Now put your hands up, guys. Some of you guys probably. They're right there. He doesn't have one. See, I've been doing this a few times, and I know that a lot of times the guys think they're assigning that to the wife. So, since you're not going to come close to me, I'm going to come a little closer to you if I can. I do want to thank Pastor for allowing me to come. I got a story to tell you. Now, please stay, if you can at all possible, stay for, we're going to have a break. I baked you some donuts. Well, I didn't exactly do that. I got some fresh donuts anyways from down here in town. And I'd love to fellowship with you. If anybody wants to talk to me during that time after the Sunday school hour, I want you to feel free to do so. I'm available, and I can stay as long as whatever, if you think that there's a need. I've been praying about this opportunity, and I have a prayer partner, and I called him this morning, and he's a 81-year-old retired pastor. And so I want you folks to know you've been prayed for. I was out in the woods the other morning hunting, and I didn't know you by name, but I prayed for you. So I'm glad to be here. Need to get you started here. I'm going to make a statement, and then I'll close with probably the same statement. It says, you can miss someone who died. You can miss someone who moved away, but the worst is when you miss someone you see every day. The scripture references that I'm going to look at is Romans 12:12. It says, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continue an instant in prayer. In verse 13, it says, distributing to the necessity of the saints. And another translation reads this way, be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer, and share with God's people who are in need. We are all in need. Jesus says that he doesn't say if you have tribulations. He says we will. So I want to be talking about that this morning. There are three things that I want to emphasize quickly. I'm going to be transparent this morning. I don't want this to sound like it's about me. Actually, I want God to be glorified in this, and as I recently heard this, and Ron, I shared it with Pastor, and he said he's heard it before, but I want God to look good in the presentation. But because I need to be somewhat transparent, I'm not doing this for you to feel sorry for me. I don't want that to distract from the message, but I will be sharing some personal things. And I also want to state this, I do not feel I'm a shining example. It's amazing that when you suffer, it brings out weaknesses that you weren't aware of. And in fact, God's given me a couple of verses in Psalm 103, verse 14. It says, he knows how weak we are. And in James 3:2, it says, we all stumble in many ways. And I thank God that they put these verses in the Bible because like Paul says in the scriptures, we are weak like men. So please keep that in mind as I proceed to go through this. I want to tell you about what I'm dealing with. If I did the math right, it's 2,321 days ago. And as of October today, the 16th, I visited my wife last night, and I know these things because I journal that it was my 1,049th visit last night to see my wife. Anybody here seen the movie Notebook? Wow, quite a few of you. I'm Still Alice. Anybody seen that one? I'm living it. That's my story. Oh, there is a third thing. I actually was on my computer this morning, but I go on my computer, but it did, for some reason, didn't go to my laptop and my iPhone, so I didn't have it on there. I just lost my thought, too. What was I going to do about that? This is a personal story, so sometimes I'll tend to lose my thoughts, so please stay attention. So if I need help, it's legitimate. And there is just something, it'll come to me. Let's get started here. Am I doing this? Yep. Oh, to the green? I see the green. Wait a minute. What's he doing? It could be me. That'll do it. Okay, all right. Here begins the story. This is back in 1968. You're going to find out that I'm at the age where it's none of your business. If you could figure out what that is, tell me during the break, all right? If you're at that age, you'll be able to relate to this. She's 17. And I met her at a Bible college out in Wisconsin, and I titled this, I Didn't Have a Chance. The very first time I met her, I introduced myself to her, but I was the president of student council at this college, and so I was to go around and make people feel welcome. Well, it'd be crazy not to make her feel welcome. But I just said hi to her and moved on, and she told her girlfriend that day, her best friend, she says, I'm going to marry that guy. So I didn't have a chance. Another picture at college. Boy, young guy there. Now, the Lord blessed us. She made another statement that she said, this is why we were dating. She said she'd like to have 6 children. And as you can see, we have 6 children. And the littlest one there with the curly hair, I'll tell you about him in a minute. Well, it's actually the little guy, that was a little guy with the long hair, with that hair. Now we're up to 2010 that we were at his wedding. And there's my wife and I at the wedding. Now, what's significant about this is 2 days later that the illness takes place. 3 sons, and the one on her left, in the middle there, his name is Tyler. He just finished med school. He's going to be a physician's assistant. It's awesome. God's brought him back to our town, and he's like less than a quarter of a mile from where I work, and he's an awesome young man. I'm very proud of all my children. You can see it. Now look at my wife, how proud she is, and how the boys just love her. I was allowed 1 picture of the girls. Anybody raised daughters, girls? I love them. They're great. But to find 1 picture that all 3 would allow me to, you know. So that's why we just have the 1. But look at my wife there, how beautiful. How proud, look. There's 6 kids again. Now, this was taken in 2010. I think there's 1 or 2 additions since, and there's another one coming in 2 months, another little boy. Another shot. That's my sons and daughters and their mates. The guy with the gray hair, I don't know about that one. All right, now, that was taken last year. If you know where Noble's Grove is, we've been going there for years. And I took a picture of my wife and put it in the front. On the right, my son and his wife, because he wasn't there. That picture. Okay, you see that. You just saw what's coming up. The wedding took place June the 11th, 2010. That was a Friday night. 2 days later, my wife, there is one thing I want to mention. I knew there was something else. Some of this stuff is not easy to see, not easy to show. I'm aware of that. My intent is not to hurt anybody. This kind of story can be hurtful. That's not my intent. I want to say this. This is what I wanted to say. I told you it'd come back to me. My wife's illness is extremely rare, okay? It is dementia. There, if you can picture an umbrella of, call that umbrella dementia, there's over 70 kinds of dementia. You're most familiar probably with Alzheimer's. This is not Alzheimer's. I'm told this kind is not hereditary, but, you know, there's questions, we're not quite sure. But please, if you're dealing with dementia, you know some people that are, it in all likelihood is not this. This is very, very rare, and I think it's good to know that. Normally, with even when there's dementia, Alzheimer's, you have time to prepare. The doctor told me my wife had the worst kind. There is not a good kind. It's horrible. But I think I need to say that because especially I want to be sensitive to those that are dealing with dementia. I don't know if anybody is here, but I've been in audiences where they brought their loved one, you know, their husband or their wife is actually in the audience and made comments to me as they go out, and they're one of the mates right there. So I thought it was important to know that. So on a Friday night, my wife, I can see it back there too, my wife woke up crying on a Sunday morning. I wasn't scheduled to preach anyplace, but it was 6:30. She walks out of the bedroom crying. She comes back in. She goes, I'm sorry. I don't know what she's talking about. And that's the first time outward sign that we saw us. And I need to go quickly on this. And I want to make one other comment about my wife. Not only is she beautiful, but she's very, very intelligent. Extremely intelligent lady. And she was diagnosing hearts over in SARE, the cardiology department. If you've ever been over there. And she's not a cardiologist, but they allowed her to view what was taking place, because she was extremely gifted at reading these things. Again, she wasn't a doctor, but very, very intelligent lady. She went from diagnosing hearts to the nursing home in 15 months. Woke up crying. We went to the doctors, and here's how it went. They said that, they thought it was stress. And again, your last kid got married and that. Each morning for a while, she had her foot operated on, and so she was off work, and then she got it off out of the cast just in time to do the wedding cake she used to do wedding cakes. But in the morning, she'd wake up crying throughout the summer, never did get to go back to work. In the afternoon, evening, she'd be okay, and then the next morning, it'd be the same thing. So they thought it was depression, so they said stress, then they said depression, then they said psychotic depression. She imagined that when she'd get up, she'd go, "Well, my foot's crooked," and it wasn't crooked. And then she thought her ears were clogged, and so to unclog her ears, she thought she had to drink a lot of liquids. Drinking the liquids as much as she did, I didn't realize this, but she washed out the sodium, and she literally went berserk. Had to rush her to the hospital. They heavily medicated her. And they thought it was serious depression. I never saw that signs of that whatsoever, but that's what they thought. To get into the mental institution, you have to go through three works of intense medications. And after those first 3 weeks, she was really out there. She was really gone, in a sense. So she's home 60 days. She's in the hospital 150. Back home. Then they gave her back to me. They says, "Your wife has dementia," and they don't keep a person with dementia in the mental health hospital. And so I had her back home 233 days. And when she came back, she was pretty much ready already to go in a nursing home, but I wasn't ready. I thought, they must not be right. This can't be wrong. It can't be right. We got a specialist, and then in February of 2011, it was diagnosed as frontal temporal dementia, frontal temporal degeneration. And that's when the doctor told me, he says, "I'm sorry, Mr. Abmo." I said, and again, there's not a good dementia. He says, "Your wife has the worst." Again, there's not a good one, not a good kind. Now, my wife, the average age where she went into an advanced dementia unit in a beautiful place, and that's another story how God worked that out. He just really worked it out. But the average age in there is around 80, and she went in at age 60. To give you some idea, recently a doctor had met me before, and he wanted to know if she was my mother. And she's younger than me. Now, these pictures are painful, but You see that. Now, this was taken 3 years ago. One of the things about this kind of dementia, I've noticed this with Alzheimer's and other kinds of dementia. One, there's a lady that has vascular dementia. That's another kind. Oxygen got cut away from the heart, and it affected her brain some. But and I'd say this respectfully, those people seem to be just out there, but you know, not with it too much. But I don't see the anxiety that I saw in my wife for the first 5 years. What's happened here? Did I turn it around again? You can tell I'd not used these before. What's happened, Ron? Still on. I just moved it, so am I holding it wrong again? Okay, thank you. All right, she's obviously now in a nursing home. That's the same lady. Once in a while, she would be like this. We're not quite sure why. I think it had something to do with, she knew something was not right. The morning she woke up crying, she knew something wasn't right. I never got to tell her, never got to discuss it, because when it was diagnosed as dementia, I was counseled not to discuss that with her now, because it wouldn't, you know, it just would hurt her, and it wouldn't. Every time I would tell her, it probably would hurt her. When I visit her, this is the way we normally visit. The first few years were, sometimes I'd go in and her behavior was so bad I couldn't stay. I'd have to leave. It was too hurtful. This is what she'll do. She'll lay in my lap. She loves to hold my hand. And she likes to interlock fingers. And see how she holds on? I had a nurse take that, just so you, this is how some of my visits were going. And again, you see how she holds on. I believe that's the last one. Is that right? I think that I want to show right now. We can take that off the screen for a little bit then. I was with her last night. It's an amazing thing that's kind of happened. I've had a lot of people pray. And I don't know what to compare this with, because I don't know anybody else is dealing with this kind of dementia. But for about 5 years, there was almost no communication. I'd go visit her, and I'd say, I love you, and she'd just look at me. And then all my kids are pretty good students. Yes, they took after their mother. And my oldest daughter made a contact for me. With a support group out in California, and they suggested going off of the psych meds and going on to a low dose of morphine, not to enhance death, but there was better results with just low doses of morphine, so they put patches on my wife's back, and in fact, they did that last night when I was there. When that took place, after about 5 years, she has come back a little bit. There are times now where she'll go, I love you, she'll go. And the other night, and some days I go, I thought in April and May I might have lost her, and then she's come back again. And the other night, and you got to understand, with dementia, this kind of dementia, we're going to try it. Maybe we can show the video. We weren't able to get it yet, but maybe during the Sunday school hour, if we can bring it up, we'll show you. NBC has a special on this. They can't speak very much. They can't. Their emotions are different. But the other day, all of a sudden, she goes, I love to hold your hand. That was so cool. I go because, well, she's my wife. I'm committed to that. My children go when I do not pressure that. It tears them apart. It doesn't seem to help my wife at all. And so I let that up to them as to how far often they want to go. I wrote this. I know what it's like. Let me give you a few of these. I know what it's like to be told of your wife of 46 years is dying, or mine dying first. With her illness, the average lifespan is 7 years, and she's in her seventh year, 4 months right now. But she's still strong physically, so I have no idea. Please don't misunderstand this, but if you saw what I saw, I want to be with Jesus. It's a little, not quite as bad now as it was for 5 years when she cried and she tried to get out and she'd look at me, why are you doing this to me? And such an intelligent person, and she just was in such fear because she didn't know what was going on. It was awful, just awful. I want to say this, I know what it's like to cry. I know what it's like to cry out to God, which is even more important. I know what it's like, to, now again, it's not self-serving here, but some of you may be able to relate to this if you've lost a loved one. Again, you can miss someone who's moved away. You can miss someone who's died. But the worst is when you miss someone that you see almost every day. I know what it's like to be lonely, to come home and there's no one there. I mean, once we had 6 children and it was a very busy place and my wife was, we didn't even need children to have an awesome life because my wife was just, she just was awesome and made my life exciting and is gone, you know. I know what it's like to have countless people make the statement they know. Somebody's trying to get me. Somebody just died. Excuse me. Where am I at here? Oh, the statement that you maybe have had this happen to you if you've had some experiences. The reason I do this message, in verse 13 it says to share with those who have need. And you either have or you are or you will, because that's part of life is the heartache. There's a lot of wonderful things. But this is not heaven. And because of sin, you understand this, we'll have to endure some of these things. And my desire, I'm going to have this handout for you, and I'll try to watch the time here, but this is an ongoing message for me. It's what's helping me get through it. It is not easy. I love my wife. I'm committed to her. You got a couple things working against me. One, I'm a man. And sinful like a man, and I need to be really committed to Christ, first of all, and to his word. David said that he was sustained by the word of God. It's you picked out the wrong person to be living alone. I'm a people person, and I'm an early riser, too. I was up this morning normally around 3:30, 4 o'clock, and I was sure enough again this morning. But I got to deal with these things. Let me say this. I told you it'd be the day she woke up crying, okay? The day she woke up crying, the physical relationship was over. Just that's it. I didn't know it till a little bit later. It was gone. The first couple years for a man is extremely difficult in those areas. But then what I have found that the loss of a companion is even harder. If you've lost your mate, you can relate to this. But the loss of my companion, we have a big king-size bed, and she always slept on the corner, on the edge. I sleep there now, you know. Miss her. I know what it's like to say, I can't take this anymore. You know, we say, take one day at a time. I know what it's like. Am I going to make it through the next minute? I guess enough of that. There's many things I could say. I have some facts on dementia that we'll look at during the Sunday school hour. During the Sunday school hour, I'm going to give you some things on how to minister to those that are hurting. And so I hope that you can stay, and then we can have some conversation there too. The message, patience in affliction. It means this. Now, you have your sheets there. This is important. It means to remain under the test in a God-honoring manner, not seeking to escape it, but eager to learn the lessons to be taught. Now, listen to me, folks. There's going to come a time. If it hasn't, maybe it is now, or it will, when you won't get out from under whatever that is, at least maybe not for a while. My life will be forever changed because of this circumstance, and that maybe has already happened to you, or it will happen. That's interesting. I was at church last week, and again, because the computer didn't work, I just gave an unprepared message on these verses. But if you look at that verse, if you have your Bibles, but that verse, it says this, patience in affliction or patience in tribulation. Now look up here. The preceding, it's amazing how God works. I have been speaking on this. God gave me this message back in 2011 when she came back home for those 233 days. I was doing the laundry one day and I just, somehow I got this passage and I looked up what it meant and I don't even know who, I can't credit somebody. I don't remember where I got it. But it says to remain under. And in fact, the author, whoever wrote that, said they were eager to remain under. I dropped the word eager because I thought, you gotta be kidding me. I think I put it back in now. Because there's a desire to think, I can't handle this. People have said to me more than once, well, Dan, God's allowed you to have this because he knows you could handle this. And that's really not the way it works. God will give you something sooner or later that you recognize you can't handle it. And the preceding, it's about 3 weeks ago now, and I've been on this passage for, what, five, 6 years now, for 4 or 5 years, whatever it is. And it's amazing how you, the Spirit of God one time will take it and just open it up. And it says, the preceding verses, that to be joyful in hope. And I'm thinking, I know God had a reason for me not seeing that until then. I'm thinking, well, how can I be joyful when it talks about it in Proverbs. A proverb says that, you know, you laughter but heartache. And that's what I'm living, laughter and heartache. And I'm thinking, well, how do you do that? How do you do that, God? And here's how you do it. You see, the patience and hope. Remember what it says there? The lessons to be taught. Here's the lesson. I believe this is why this may be the reason, but whatever, one of the reasons, if not the reason, why we suffer, and it's this, so we get to know God better. It has to do with the knowledge of God. It's the knowledge of God that gives you the hope. Not necessarily, not the circumstance. I watched my wife last night. She's got a lot of body movement too now, and it's so disheartening. And she's laying there next to me, and some nights are worse than others. Last night, she's just doing a lot of this, and I would look at her, and, well, you'll never guess what. Now, I love sports. Our sons were pretty good high school and college players, and we went to lots of games. We haven't watched TV together, but now they've got her watching a little bit of TV, and she watches sports. So last night for 2.5 hours, we watched some football and some baseball, and she just lay there for 2.5 hours. And every once in a while, she'd make a comment. So, you know, that's what we were doing. Again, excuse me when I get sidetracked because it's hard to stay on track here, so I better get back to this. We've got ground to cover yet. Let's see. Oh, the joyful and hope part. After, okay, the joyful and hope comes from knowledge of God, but right after that it talks about prayer. Okay, right. And I saw that 2 weeks ago. I never really examined the word. I was so focused on the writing things down that I missed the before and the after of that verse. 3 weeks ago, it says, Dan, you need to be joyful in hope. Why? The hope is knowledge of God. I know where Cheryl's going to be one day. I know where I'm going to be one day. That helps. Doesn't change the circumstance. There's going to still be heartache. But there's the hope that we have. And then it talks about the prayer. And I've been doing this. There were times when I would do this, especially the first couple years. I'd be breaking down constantly when I was up there preaching. I'd say, God, why am I even doing this? And then I'd get another opportunity, and now God's given me real passion to do this, and I believe this is what I should do. And the next verse, verse 13, it says, to share those who have need. Folks, you have needs. I know that. I have needs. And so my desire is for you to take these notes and hold on to them and study them. Let's look at these points. Romans, or the first one is what I call prudence. You know, we move rather quickly here, but capable of exercising sound judgment of your thought life. It's not your circumstances that have you down. Actually, it's your thoughts about your circumstances The mind is the most restless, unruly part of mankind, and it's the enemy's number one target. Did you hear what I said? Would you look up here, please? The enemy's number one target is our mind. Living with Cheryl for 40 years, and now she's no longer in that bed. And I wake up in the morning. What do you think I do when I wake up? Anybody want to tell me? You know, guess. I get out of bed. Why? Because of the thought life, especially early on. She's not there. She's not there. 40 years, and she's not there. And not only is she not there, but I saw her last night. I can go to sleep really quick. I only need about four. The doctor just checked. I asked the doctor the other day, a couple weeks ago, I said, I only sleep about 4 hours. Is that okay? He said, some people, that's all they need. I guess that's all I need. But I can go to, you know, I go to bed around 10, 10:30, 11 o'clock, and I'm out. But an hour later, I'll wake up for whatever reason, and then I go back to sleep again. But many, many times, I'd wake up that first hour, and then I'd just think of what I saw. Oh, I bought her flowers one time, and she was eating them. She's done everything I won't tell you, especially those first 5 years. Sometimes the behavior was so heartbreaking. She has, I don't know what the medical term. I think I know what it is, but let me just tell you. Years ago, women had lots of babies, okay? And that can cause issues. And my wife can have those issues because of some physical issues where she thinks she's having a child. And I went there one day, and she goes, I'm pregnant. I'm going to have a baby, and she's crying. And she actually had the physical pain. So they have to watch her really careful to control, you know, the intake and the outtake, okay? When you see that, it just slays you to see that. And the enemy knows that. And he could, well, Dan, you know, this is the Jesus that you love. It's going. Now, I've never gotten bitter toward God. And I've never been tempted to take my life. I want to say this, though. Be really careful about judging people that are hurting, because you just don't know. Even if you see what they're doing, you're questioning, why would they be doing that? They're a Christian. You just don't know. I was thinking about that coming down, non-related, but I have a good friend of mine that I guess I should tell you, that's come to my mind. I pray about, you know, illustrations, and they come to my mind. I sound Christian for in marriage for 35 years, and then recently was informed that his wife for 5 years had been having an affair. And breaks his heart. The church that he went to most of his life, he's totally feels like totally rejected, and so he got to go someplace else. And why am I saying that? Only because I'm thinking to myself, be careful about judging people that are hurting, because you just don't know. They need your love. They need your love. The Lord can work these other things out. They need your love. But anyways, you've got some verses there. You have to look them up as you have opportunity. There is a verse, three verses that have really helped me a lot. That's Hebrews 12, 1 through 3, and it says this: let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Translated, let us throw everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. Okay, here it is. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. I didn't get here by mistake. Neither did you. I mean, God is in control. And you don't always understand it. Maybe in Sunday school, if we have enough time, I don't know what all we'll cover, but I have some stuff on that. But why is not the right question. The right question is who. If you come to Sunday school, ask me to talk about that, I'll bring it up. But the race marked out for us is, let us fix our eyes on Jesus. You need to fix your eyes on Jesus. God has given us the amazing freedom to choose the focal point of our mind. The mind is the most restless and really part of mankind. I've mentioned it before. It's the enemy's number one target. Thoughts determine actions and attitudes. But we do decide what we entertain in our mind. I want to stop and say one thing. My wife can't do that. I don't know what she can do. I didn't give you this, but let me quickly mention this to you. I wrote something down. I'm not real original, but I did write something down if I can find it. Let's see here. Here it is. Of all I know, and this doesn't, I penned this down, but I don't know if I can. You can grasp the impact of this. But imagine seeing your wife over 1,000 times like this, 1,049 times, just since she's been in a nursing home. Of all I know, what I do know is that the toughest thing I do know is what I don't know. And that is, what does my wife know? She can't tell me. And I don't know. It's a guessing game. I'd like to think that there's Lord's involved in that. Okay, back to... And there's verses, we just don't have time. I want to mention this. A negative thought, fear, worry, doubt, unbelief, and boy, you have them all. You have them all. Those thoughts are not from God. Now, why do I mention that? Because when you have those thoughts, you say, wait a minute, it's not from God. And if you realize, you recognize that, and get your focus back on Jesus, on the Lord. It's amazing what the mind can do. But when you discipline your mind, in fact, there's a scripture that in Proverbs that says, he who lacks discipline despises himself. It's extremely important to be disciplined, especially when you're hurting. That's one of the reasons I go to Planet Fitness almost every morning. You get older, it's not easier, but it's a discipline that I must do, and I do it. And I get along with the Lord. You figure out what you need to do, what God leads you to do, and then you do it. Not whether or not you feel like it, you do it. The discipline is so important. So here's the thing. Here's the problem, though. They say men can departmentalize, and they say, I'm not going to say what they say about women's minds, because I don't understand those. Never did. I had a wife and three daughters. Never did quite figure that one out. But we can departmentalize. Men can. In other words, we think of my wife, and then somehow you set that aside. You can do that. But then you know what you have to deal with? Guilt. Well, if you loved your wife, why would you? You see, the mind. If I worry about it or in anguish about it, it is not going to change what it is. It's not going to change it. You need to be proactive. Don't have time to talk about this. I do want to say this. Some of you may know John Blois, a good friend of mine. And John recommended Ron Snavely. And Ron, often you're going to need a lawyer to just help you put things together. Most people are afraid to publicly speak. I used to be, but I'm not now. Do you know what intimidates me? It's paperwork. My wife always did it. I didn't even know when our kids were born. I had to write on a piece of... She always did all that. And then, going to the post office, I didn't want to go because I didn't know, what am I going to get next? All the forms you got to fill out. You know, it cost $12,500 a month for my wife. I don't have that kind of money. Now, I do pay some. But through getting a hold of Ron, he was such a huge help. So oft times you're going to need somebody like that. And you need to do that. But there are people out there to help you. I was not aware of this. There are agencies out there to help you. Of course, the medical field, a lawyer. You cannot just go into a nursing home without CASA. It's an agency that comes and examines. And my wife really needed to be in one. And every 3 months, they have to recheck her. First time, I wasn't ready. But I tell you what, for 233 days, I was not getting much sleep. And I guess probably you could say in the nick of time, we finally did get her in. I don't know how much longer I could do what I was doing. I still worked for it full time, and I was with her nights and weekends. I didn't go to church for 8 months because I couldn't get anybody help. I didn't know how to ask for help. I asked a couple ladies, and all of a sudden they couldn't miss church. I appreciate that. And I didn't want to ask my kids. I couldn't ask my sons because of the issues and my daughters. I just didn't think that was right. So I ended up being home with her. And that, I, I, That's why I want to do Sunday school, do talk about some things, because I did not know how to ask for help, and I, by the grace of God, I somehow got through it, though. Social Security, the Department of Social Services, the Office of the Aging, these are agencies that were a huge help to me. Now, they're out there to help you. They'll examine you like you wouldn't believe. My wife did the banking for over 30 years, and all of a sudden, for the last 5 years, I get an account for everything. Oh, but got through it. I needed really needed help. My brother called me. He's a retired major in the service and chaplain, and he says, called me one day. He says, Dan, I'll come if you need me. And I said, I'll be okay, George. We hang up, and I'm thinking, what in the world? You just tell him you're not okay. I called him back, and he came. Number three, need to be perceptive. Need to be perceptive. Learn to take one day at a time. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom. Folks, we need to be immersed in the word. Again, David said he was sustained by the word of God. I don't know how well I'm expressing this, but at least in my own heart and mind, it makes God look good to me, just knowing what I'm dealing with. There are times, and I'm not boasting of this whatsoever, because I talked already about weaknesses. There's some times I'm thinking, how can I handle this? I don't know how to express this, but if you took the emotional pressure, or whatever you want to call it, strain on me, that I go through a little bit of it every day, every time I see her, last night, she's 2.5 hours, she's sitting there, and it hurts. But if you took all that hurt at one time, I don't know how I think it would kill you. You got to be immersed in his word. And let the word of Christ dwell on you richly. We need to accept the limitations of living one day at a time. And again, I don't have the time to tell you some stories right now, but it got there were times when I didn't know if I could make it the next minute. Didn't know I could make it. Again, I'm not going to do anything to myself, but I didn't know if I could make it. You need to learn that God is in control. He's in control. I'm not a hyper-Calvinist, but you got to come to some conclusions. One is God has a plan. If you establish the fact, remember I talked about the who, not the why. The who is God. If you establish in your mind, you got to do this. You got to establish in your mind God's always good. That will help you. You are not going to understand a lot of things. But if you have the concept, he's always good. He loves us. It will get you through some of these things that you don't understand. I want to say this, we walk by faith, not by sight. That brings up a whole other topic. In Sunday school, somebody asked me about testing for dementia. Will you? Somebody, you bring that up. I can't talk about it. I don't have enough time. Because that is a question that really comes up. And I have something I'd like to say on that. But we walk by faith, not by sight. Two words to help you cope. Or accept and trust. The mind controlled by the Spirit of his life and peace, Romans 8:6. Psalm 141:8, but my eyes are fixed on you, O sovereign Lord, in you I take refuge. Boy, that's the verse, in you I take refuge. And then, of course, Romans 8:28 really becomes a reality. And then 2 Corinthians 1:9, this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God. After dealing with this for a few years, I thought, okay, God, if you've orchestrated this, you want me to get to know you better, this seems like such a great price to pay. How can some good come out of this? And I purposed in my heart, I want to be to make us and not break us, three things: God's sovereign permission, God's eternal consistency, in other words, he's always good, and God's continual presence with us. So we look at this, prudence, being proactive, perception, productive, and I want to talk about the productive part in Sunday school, because the time is running out here. Got some very important things for you to hear, so please, if at all possible, stay. At least I know you can't hunt in Pennsylvania on Sundays, so I love to hunt. hopefully you can stay. The perseverance is the capacity to remain under the stress until God's work is done. Okay? I have here the prayer request of the one suffering. I've had people pray, they hear me, and they're friends or whatever. Oh boy, and I want to, again, hope you can stay, because I want to talk about loneliness. I want to talk about, I almost wrote a message, where are the Christians? And God had to really teach me some things. They are there. There are reasons why I got frustrated, because I wasn't aware of how it actually is. And I'd like to tell you how it actually is. Because, again, the battle of the mind, the enemy's going to say to you, Christians are supposed to be caring people. Where are they? And they are there, but I recognize why sometimes it's really hard for them to show up. And where I have to be careful not to judge others that are suffering, I need to be careful, too, of those of judging people who apparently don't seem to be there. But there are reasons for that, and I'd like to share that. I had to get through that. Here's the difficult thing. The one suffering still is responsible for his reactions. And if you are mistreated, I remember one time coming out of Wegmans. I'm there almost every day. I keep my place really nice, live on campus, but I'm not a cook. I go to Wegmans almost every day, get something, or either that or eat to college. Saw this individual come out of Wegmans. I'm going in. Oh, Dan, I've been having this. And I knew this. I was a co-worker. And this is about 5 years into this now. And this individual, oh, I've just been praying for you. I've been thinking of you. And you know what I'm thinking? Where in the world you've been for 5 years? I haven't seen you. Now you're telling me. And I had a bad attitude. And that poor individual, now I doubt if it was every day, but I think they were sincere. I'm the one that's hurting. Now I'm the one that has a bad attitude. And the devil knows that. The adversary, whatever, wherever that's coming from. And you have to learn to deal with those things. It's just important. With the perseverance, we've got to close. You see in 1 Peter 4:11, it says, well, let's look at verse. Well, 1 Peter 4:11, by the strength God supplies. Verse 10, James 5:10 says, brothers, as examples of patience in the face of suffering. It was about 3 or 4 months ago. I don't remember the circumstance, but was just hurting. Seeing my dear wife. And I remember going out of the nursing home telling God. Now, when you're hurting, I want to encourage you to be honest with God, because he knows anyways. It's okay to talk to him. He's become a friend. What a friend we have in Jesus. You know the song. He really becomes a friend. He knows your thoughts. He knows, you know. And you need to be willing to open up and talk to him about these things. But here where it says examples, I remember leaving the nursing home and thinking, God, I am so tired of being an example. And I wept, you know, about that. I just want to get out from under this. It's been too long. It's grief. It doesn't end. Now, it's lessened some over the years. But I already know that if I outlive her, it's going to hit me hard again. I can already sense that. We are to be examples. Well, how are we going to be an example? Verse 11 says, we consider blessed those who have persevered. What's that mean? Look up here, folks. What that means is, look up here. It's the strength that God provides. How is he going to provide strength? You've got to be in his word. You've got to spend time alone with him. The part about prayer, patience and affliction, and then he addresses prayer. And the greatest desire you have, I trust that you'll have, is that you'll persevere. That you'll persevere. I'm going to close with a little, one more story. And I'm going to ask my hunting buddy back there, I forget his name already, I'm sorry, Don't bring it up till, okay, but you'll be there at that slide, right? So I won't have to do it. Thank you. Let's hope he gets a really big buck this year for being such a big help. The perseverance is important to me. I love my family. 6 married children, 15 grandchildren, another one on the way. I'm not famous. Don't have any false illusions of that. But I've been at the college in the 38th year. I literally have about 1,000 pastors on this, and I know about half of them I know pretty well. I don't want to let them down. I don't let my wife down. But I also recognize there's weaknesses. And so it's probably a good fear. Talks about in Proverbs about fearing of God. I would fear my weaknesses. I'm still a man. But if I had 5 minutes with Cheryl where I could really talk to her, let me say two things. More recently, there's times now when she will tell me she loves me. But for about 5 years, she was not able to do that. I'm going to show you something in a moment that she actually wrote for me about 3 years ago. You need to understand something, though. At this point, she can no longer write. She would make notes. With this kind of a dementia, they get obsessed. She was obsessed with her husband and food. And then after about a year, it was just food. And she'd write this, and then when I recognized it scratches now, she no longer could write. I took the book home. I wanted to hold on to it. I didn't want to lose it. I don't know just why, but so I know she can't write. About 6 months later, it was on Mother's Day, okay, that this happens. It would have been, excuse me, Mother's Day, I think this Mother's Day might be actually, it's either 3 or 4 years, I lose track anymore. I go in to see her. Again, if I could communicate to my wife, it wouldn't be necessary for her to say to me on her own that she loved me. At that point, when I'd tell her I love her, she'd just look at me. I love you, honey. About the third or fourth time I'd say that, she'd go, I know you, I love you. No, she would say, I know you do. She didn't seem to be able to put I love you too. Remember when you get away from your wife or your husband, I love you, and you go, I love you too. Right? That's what you do. Hope you don't go, I hate you. Right? No, you know what I'm saying? She couldn't do that. She didn't have to do that because I never doubted my wife's love for me. She was an awesome person. But it was nice to hear it, but I don't have to hear it. But here's what I would say to her, honey, pray for me that I finish this well. That God will look good through this. You see, I don't take that for granted. I don't take it for granted. Again, my ministry, a lot of it now is kind of developed to be just a listener to pastors. And once in a while, they're sinful men like we all are. And I've seen a few failures of people that I really held in high esteem. And I thought, well, happened to them, it could happen to me. Especially those first couple years, hard. I had a good marriage, and when it's gone instantly, it's not easy to deal with. And the companion, I spend hours and hours and hours just holding her hand, she doesn't talk. Even now, it's not hard to talk much. Okay? But if I could communicate, I'd say, honey, pray that God looks good when it's all done, said and done. As I'm going into the nursing home on Mother's Day, 2 or 3 years ago now, I lose the track. I think it's 3 years ago, but whatever. There's an activities girl, and she says, Mr. Rathmore, I've got something I want to show you. And I said, okay, well, I'll look at it on my way out. She said, well, your wife has something for you. I didn't think much of it. That day, she was heavily medicated because some of her behavior was so bad. A lot of that's not there now because we got her on low doses of morphine instead of that psych med stuff. And for her, my wife's kind of dementia, there just isn't any kind of, you know, medicine. And so I'm with her a couple hours. Now, I asked, I didn't want the kids to come on Mother's Day. It rips them apart, doesn't help her. But I go, she's my wife. And I can remember going in and dreading this. And you see what happens when, and you can relate to this, some of you maybe, if you lost a loved one, holidays are awful hard. I remember the second Christmas without Cheryl. The first one was really hard, but the second one was worse. I was in CVS in September, and please excuse what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it. I go walk into CVS, and there's Christmas decorations, and I said, oh, I said it out loud, and I hope nobody heard me. I said, oh, God, it's Christmas again. Now, that's an awful way for a Christian to say that, but it just kind of overwhelmed me, you know? It overwhelmed me. So on the way out, now you got to picture this. In this nursing home, there's a nursing station. Now, they've remodeled it since, but there's a nursing station right in the middle. Every nurse, nurse's aide, they were all watching me. They knew what was going to take. I didn't know what was going to take place. And I come out, and they said, Mr. Rappel, your wife asked for a pencil, and she wrote this. I'm thinking, really? Now, if this is not a God thing, and I say that to say this, God knows you're hurting when you're hurting. There's no temptation taking you, but he will be there for you. It doesn't mean it's going to, this is what will take my wife's life eventually. I've accepted that. After 2 years, I accepted that. Once in a while, when you cry out to him, or when he'll be there for you. And she writes me this note. If you can put it up. Me having the clicker have anything to do with it? There we go. Can you read it? I want to read it to you. Okay, Mother's Day 2013. Dear Dan, I want you to keep the faith. And I want you to keep the faith. And I love you so much. I love you so much. And I want you to keep the faith. Isn't that amazing? That's a God thing. You got to understand this. For me to talk to my wife about that would be like talking to that pulpit there. It had the ability to understand that as much as my wife because of her condition. Especially this first, she was so heavily medicated during that time. She does understand a little bit once in a while, but not much, but a little bit. That time, nothing. That's the desire of my heart right there, to keep the faith. I could not communicate that to her. It just blew me over when I saw. And I'm not sure there was many dry eyes. Now, I think the people that were working there probably wouldn't understand, you know, the magnitude of it. I think one or two of them maybe are Christians, but I sure knew. And it's like God was, somehow he just did that. The Holy Spirit did that. And I hope that that's an encouragement to you in a sense. I'm going to close with this. Good night. We're supposed to start Sunday school at what time? Okay. Hey, if you love Jesus, you'll stay for the second part. Did you hear what I said? I says, if you love Jesus, you'll stay for that. I know you love Jesus, but if you can't stay, that's okay. I just hope that your tires aren't flattering. Like, no. But let's close this session in prayer. And then what do? We go out for, okay. Thank you for listening. As you'll find out in our next session, you've actually ministered to me this morning by listening. And I want to talk about that. The importance of listening, we'll discuss that. Let's bow our heads in prayer. Father, I thank you for this attentive audience, and thank you for those that are here. And just the right ones are here. No more, no less. These are the ones that you had come, and there was a purpose in it. And I pray, Lord, that you'd be honored, glorified in what was said, and that there was some clarity there, Lord. It's hard to stay right online all the time because of such an emotional thing. I do thank you again for my wife. And thank you, God, that you used her even in her weakened condition you used her in my life, and you continue to do that. And maybe she's not aware of it. I don't think that she is, but she still influences me. And thank you for that. Pray for these people that are here today, Lord. You know the needs. You know the heartaches in the past, present, future. I pray, Lord, that these notes, that they'll place them where they can pull them out when needed. I'm sure there's some other things, but I also believe that these principles here with the verses will be of assistance. At least it's helped me. If it helps me, it can certainly help them. And so thank you for this opportunity. And we'll be careful to give the praise in Jesus' name. Amen.